The former Egyptian president, Hosni Mubarak, has won an appeal against his conviction and life sentence for the killing of protesters during the revolt that overthrew him. A court in Cairo has ordered that both Mr. Mubarak and his former security chief should be retried. Six men have been arrested in northern India in connection with another case of gang rape on a bus. Police say a 29-year-old woman was abducted on a bus near the northwestern city of Amritsar. The rape and murder of a young student in Delhi last month sparked a national outcry and calls for tougher rape laws. The Labour leader, Ed Miliband, has said a Labour government might not reverse the coalition's decision to take away child benefit from families where one parent is a higher rate taxpayer. Labour has criticised the move as unfair, saying it'll hit those on middle incomes the hardest. Mr. Miliband said he didn't know what sort of financial situation he might inherit from the coalition government if he won the next election. Police in Jamaica are appealing for information about the shooting of an 8-year-old girl from South London. Imani Green, who lived in Balham, was killed on Friday night while on holiday visiting relatives with her mother. Police said that a group of men were in a cafe in northern Jamaica, which is owned by the girl's cousin, when one of them opened fire following an argument. Downing Street has stressed that no British troops will be deployed in a combat role in the West African state of Mali. It follows the announcement that Britain is to provide transport planes to fly foreign troops and equipment to Mali to support the French military operation against rebels linked to Al-Qaeda. The first anniversary of the Costa Concordia disaster is being marked with ceremonies on the Italian island of Giglio, where the cruise ship overturned, killing 32 people. Relatives of the dead and survivors will observe a minute's silence this evening at the exact time the vessel struck rocks. And the weather, rain and snow will spread southeastwards, reaching the Midlands by evening. Elsewhere will be dry with sunny spells, but with wintry showers towards the east. And it will feel cold everywhere. BBC News and weather at 1:02. And time now to join Lucy Skeeping for today's Early Music Show. Thank you.
Welcome to Arcadia. Well, Handel's version of it anyway. That was Marta Lukin and Capella Savaria, conducted by Nicholas McGeegan, with the aria Quanto mai felice siete, how happy you are, innocent shepherdesses who know no other law than that of love. It comes from Handel's opera Il Pastor Fido, or The Faithful Shepherd, which had its premiere in London in 1712. And the whole thing, we're told, takes place in the Arcadian countryside, that mythical spot supposedly hidden somewhere in the heart of ancient Greece, where elegantly attired nymphs and shepherds live a beautiful, innocent and peacefully bucolic life, utterly untroubled, apart from the heartfelt yearnings and occasional fulfilments of true love. Pastoral themes like that were, of course, very common in the arts, particularly in late Renaissance Italy, at the very dawn of what we would now call opera. The original text of Pastor Fido dates back to the 1580s, but during the next century, with the rise of opera seria, which favoured a more serious or noble style, pastoral opera began to be seen as rather frivolous. All those jolly shepherds and shepherdesses were gradually eclipsed by muscular heroes, pompous emperors, gods and villains. It did emerge again, though, at the end of the next century, this idea of an Arcadian Garden of Eden. And alongside its revival came the creation in Rome of the Academy of the Arcadians. This wasn't exactly a formal organisation, more of a loose circle of influential people led by that powerful patron of the arts, Cardinal Pietro Ottoboni, who all felt the time had come to return to the old classical simplicities. The Academy was mainly a literary fraternity, but a number of distinguished musicians also belonged, amongst them Corelli, the 300th anniversary of his death, as it happens, falls this very week. Here's Europa Galante, always thrilling, with Corelli's Concerto Grosso No. 2.
Thank you.
Corelli's Concerto Grosso Opus 6, No. 2, performed by Europa Galante, directed by Fabio Biondi. In 1706, Corelli was formally admitted to the Academy of the Arcadians. It had initially been set up as a kind of homage in memory of Queen Christina of Sweden, a great patron of the arts and devout Catholic, who, having abdicated her throne, lived in exile in Rome until her death. She'd been a great lover of music. Composers such as Scarlatti and Stradella dedicated works to her, and Corelli, having entered her service in 1679, dedicated his first printed collection of trio sonatas to her. This is one of his so-called church sonatas, performed by the Purcell Quartet.
Thank you.
Purcell Quartet with Sonata da Chiesa in G major, Opus 1, number 9 by Corelli. So Corelli was a member of Rome's elite intellectual society known as the Academy of the Arcadians. Most of the members, however, were literary men, amongst them the poet Silvio Stampiglia, who was almost certainly present at the Academy's solemn inauguration ceremony, held in the autumn of 1690 in an appropriately pastoral setting, a wooded area on a hill overlooking Rome. Stampiglia wrote countless opera texts, most famously perhaps one about the foundation of the city of Naples by its mythical muse, Partenope. The story inspired several composers. It was even staged in the New World in Mexico City to music by Manuel de Sumaya. And in the 1720s, Stampiglia's libretto was taken in hand by Leonardo Vinci, who reworked the 1722 setting made by Domenico Sarro. Neapolitan by birth, Vinci had settled in Rome, but with a commission for Venice's carnival season upon him, and at very short notice, he revived the work, giving it a new title, Rosmira Fedele, perhaps because it was felt that the Venetians might not have been very interested in a story that celebrated the origins of such a faraway city as Naples. It is an incredibly complicated plot. Rosmira is disguised as a foreign prince, and here, in the final act, she's found herself involved in a duel with her own lover. Here's Maria Grazia Schiavo in the title role. Hey, an aria from Leonardo Vinci's opera Partenope, or Rosmira Fedele, the libretto by Stampilia, a member of Rome's illustrious society known as the Academy of the Arcadians. As well as a dedication to the revival of the classical world in the arts, the Academy seems to have been an excellent place for networking, particularly when it came to librettists meeting up with fellow musicians. Giovanni Bononcini was one of the first musicians to join the Academy, and he composed opera after opera to texts by Stampilia. He's probably best known to history as the other composer of Italian opera in 18th century London, the supposed rival of Handel. But he composed oratorios too, and this aria comes from his 1693 oratorio, San Nicola di Bari. An aria from the oratorio San Nicola di Bari, words by Silvio Stampilia, music by Giovanni Bononcini, both of them members of Rome's elite club known as the Academy of the Arcadians. One of the traditions of the Academy was to take on supposedly Arcadian names. Stampilia, for example, became Palaemon Licurio. As for the man who went by the pseudonym Terpandro Azariano, well, he was none other than Alessandro Scarlatti, whose music we're going to hear next. We tend to think of Scarlatti primarily as the great founding father of opera in Naples, but while he was in Rome for a few years, he worked for Cardinal Ottoboni, and it wasn't long before he too was admitted to the Arcadian Society. In fact, the piece we'll hear may have been composed to mark his induction, the Serenata Venere, Amore et Ragioni. The libretto has been attributed to Scarlatti's fellow academician, our friend Silvio Stampilia. And as you might expect, it's all very Arcadian. It tells how Venus is worried about the behaviour of her son Amore, or Cupid, who's been cavorting among the seven hills of Rome with the local nymphs and shepherds. But it all ends well as Cupid explains to his mother that with reason as his guide, the quality of love among his friends and followers has been duly enhanced.
Thank you.
music from Scarlatti's Serenata Venere, Amore e Ragioni. In 1711, Rome's Arcadian Academy opened its doors to another highly distinguished composer, Benedetto Marcello. He was a pupil, in fact, of another Arcadian, Francesco Gasparini, whose music we're going to hear later on. But first, I want to play you a solo piece, a kind of extended cantata by Marcello, sung here by the countertenor Andreas Scholl. Earlier in the cantata, he's told us, "When I consider the torments of love, my thoughts lead me to these woods where no beasts lurk." And now, in Altro non amo che dolce pace, "I love nothing but sweet peace."
Altrove tempo, che dolce pace, altrove.
countertenor Andreas Scholl with the Accademia Bizantina, directed by Ottavio Dantone, and an aria from an Arcadian chamber sonata by Benedetto Marcello, Quando Penso agli Affanni. Rome's Arcadian Academy, founded in the early 18th century, may have been a mix of both literary men and musicians, but there was a common goal, a desire to free Italian poetry from the old complex style of the Baroque and to encourage a cult of simplicity and innocent pleasure inspired largely by nature. And that sentiment is certainly present in the pastoral cantata Ecco che alfin ritorno by Francesco Gasparini. Here, in the first of its two arias, a tortured lover finds solace in nature, in friendly woods and shady plants which calm his troubled heart. Again, the singer is Andreas Scholl.
Fugge, fugge, io, damma.
La pietà che ancor non trova, an aria from Francesco Gasparini's pastoral cantata Ecco che al fin ritorno. But let's return to Handel once more now, whose aria from his London opera The Faithful Shepherd began the programme. Handel may not have been exactly an official member of Rome's Academy of Arcadians, but just a few years before he wrote the opera, he was living in Rome, where his great patron was another Arcadian, Prince Ruspoli. He must surely have been an influence, because Handel's interest in matters Arcadian is evident in a great deal of his work. Just think, for example, of his two settings of the Acis and Galatea story, or some of his vocal duets, such as this little gem. Alas, in this mortal life, the greatest happiness a heart can expect is to be free from care. Ai nelle sorte umane, a pastoral duet by Handel performed by Nathalie Desaix and Véronique Jean with Le Concert d'Astrée, directed by Emmanuel Haïm. For all the celebrated musicians who were admitted to the Rome-based Academy of the Arcadians, it remained primarily a literary fraternity. But many of its leading lights had a special interest in the relationship between words and music. Most notably, perhaps, the man who, in due course, was to become the most famous librettist of them all, Metastasio. Most, or many, of Metastasio's texts lend themselves to unabashed opera seria. Didone Abbandonata was set something like 50 times, while Mozart in 1791 was just the latest in a long queue to set La Clemenza di Tito. But he'd already set another Metastasio text much earlier while he was living in Salzburg, Il Re Pastore. The plot may be all about warlike themes at the time of Alexander the Great, or about kings and palaces, but in essence, yes, we're still very much in an Arcadian land and soundscape, peopled by shepherds and shepherdesses whose complex love lives are played out against picturesque flocks and grassy hills. So we began the programme with a shepherd by the young Handel, and we're going to end with another by the even younger Mozart. The lively overture he composed for his 1775 Metastasio opera, The Shepherd King, Il Re Pastore.
Andrea Marcon conducted La Cetra in the overture to Mozart's Il Re Pastore, ending today's early music show. The programme was presented by Lucy Skeeping and produced in Salford by Sam Phillips.
This week's Jazz Record Requests is dedicated to just one musician, Dave Brubeck, who died last month, aged 91. There's music from across his career, from his early octet, via his famous quartet, to his recent band with his sons. And many listeners also share their memories of this great pianist, composer and bandleader. That's a special Dave Brubeck edition of Jazz Record Requests with me, Alan Shipton, here on BBC Radio 3 this Saturday afternoon at 5 o'clock.
And now the Sunday concert, which was recorded last weekend.
Welcome to Leeds Town Hall for this afternoon's concert on BBC Radio 3 featuring the National Youth Orchestra of Great Britain. I'm Adam Tomlinson. Today's concert is part of the Leeds International Concert season and sees the NYO joining forces with the ladies of the Leeds Festival Chorus to perform music by John Adams, Benjamin Britten and Gustav Holst. The National Youth Orchestra was founded back in 1948 by Dame Ruth Railton, a music director and conductor whose grandfather, George Scott Railton, was second in command to General William Booth, the founder of the Salvation Army. Ruth had the belief that young musicians from across the country could form a symphony orchestra, not just as a means of expression, but as an ensemble of quality and skill. Needless to say, her friends, her colleagues and her contemporaries all had their doubts about such an idea. But history was to prove otherwise, and 65 years later, her conception has proved hugely successful. In fact, if proof was needed, last year, one-fifth of the 90 musicians that make up the London Symphony Orchestra were former NYO players. And worth pointing out that this performance sees the latest in a long line of young performers, as this is the fresh and brand new class of 2013, with players from all over the country, including amongst others Newcastle, Bristol, Tenby, Edinburgh, York, Stockport, oh, and of course, Leeds. Well, recently the orchestra has been awarded the prestigious Queen's Medal for Music at a London gala, and the annual award recognises an individual or group that has had a major impact on the UK's musical life. It's the first time the award has been given to an organisation. Well, I spoke to the NYO's chief executive and artistic director, Sarah Alexander, and I asked her what it meant to be the winner of the Queen's Medal.
It's an incredible thing to receive the Queen's Medal. NYO has been going for 64 years. And what happens in that moment when you hear that you've won the Queen's Medal for Music is the sort of whole 64 years crystallise. That's an incredible endorsement of 64 years, and it's the first real endorsement. And I think that NYO is, in a way, a secret. On the one hand, it's had this incredible impact. An unbelievable number of musicians from NYO have gone on to lead the profession, and an unbelievable number of people in audiences love music because they were in the NYO. And anyone who's seen an NYO concert knows that it's the most fun you can have in a concert hall. And it's been the most fun you can have in a concert hall as a musician or an audience member for 64 years, but somehow it's still a secret. And this is a sort of moment where it feels it isn't a secret anymore. It's now all of our job to broadcast really loudly and clearly. The NYO, you know, Great Britain's Team for Music, incredible achievement of our teenagers. All of those young people on the concert platform are at school. You know, they go back to school on Monday. It's amazing. That's what young people can do. And the teamwork between them is incredible. And so the Queen's Medal enables us to really look with pride at 64 years, but also to recognise what an incredibly fresh thing NYO is every year, because every single year there's a new orchestra, there's a new funding situation as well. I mean, you can't take anything for granted. This year we've got 87 new members, and they're coming in, and with 77 returning members. I mean, it's a huge number of new people. And they're coming in and they feel like, oh, we've been told we've won the Queen's Medal for Music, but isn't a reality to us yet. But as the rehearsal week went on, people have come up to me and said, I feel that what you said is real for me now. I feel the values of the organisation, the ethos, the discipline, the creativity, the friendliness, working together, teamwork. Those are the same things that have been said for 64 years. And people come into the orchestra and they feel it and they experience it and they live it. It belongs to them. You know, you create the environment and then they own it. And we were very proud that members received the award and then they played with the LSO on the night they received the award. And I think that shows really very clearly what faith we have in our members. It's a young people's organisation.
Sarah Alexander, the Chief Executive and Artistic Director of the National Youth Orchestra of Great Britain. Today's programme consists of one of the great orchestral suites, Gustav Holst's The Planets, alongside Britain's enigmatic 4C interludes from Peter Grimes, and Guide to Strange Places by John Adams. And that's where we'll start. It had its world premiere in Holland on the 6th of October in 2001, with the composer conducting the Netherlands Radio Orchestra. There are nods in it to Stravinsky's Rite of Spring, to Dukas, the Sorcerer's Apprentice, and to Harrison Birtwistle, and even George Gershwin. It's a whirlwind of rhythm and tone, and just when you think you're settled, Adams takes us off in a completely the opposite direction. So the best thing to do is to sit back and give in to the colours Adams produces. The National Youth Orchestra of Great Britain performed John Adams' Guide to Strange Places. You can hear applause in the background. That's for the leader of the orchestra. He's 16-year-old Roberto Ruisi. He's the youngest ever leader of the National Youth Orchestra of Great Britain. More applause as the lights dim here in Leeds Town Hall. John Wilson, he's conducting the National Youth Orchestra of Great Britain, and this is his first performance with the NYO.